From the Reactor Radio Studios, this is the Stephen Perkins Program.
Hello and welcome to the Stephen Perkins Program, this week episode number 15. This is the only program where information and entertainment collide. Very happy to have you joining us this week. We have a lot to talk about this week, a lot of interesting stories coming out. And can I make a prediction? May I? It's my show. I'm going to go and grant myself that permission. I have a feeling that certain people on my side of the aisle, on the conservative side of the aisle, they're not going to enjoy this episode as much as my others. But that's, you'll hear why in a moment. This week has been going pretty well for me. Hopefully it's been going well for you. Let me tell you, the first thing I want to talk about today, if you saw, if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook or the Instagrams, you probably saw me post the topics for this week. And the first one is one that I want to dive right into. I don't want to do too much introduction into it. I just want to get right into it because I think it's a fascinating story. And it's something we should really be paying attention to, this person and how they think. So let me just read you the headline from OutsetMagazine.com. Wonder why I chose that site. Raven Simone doesn't want to be labeled gay or African-American. In a recent Where Are They Now interview with Oprah Winfrey, Raven Simone said she doesn't want to be labeled gay or as an African-American. She wants to be called just simply an American. The 28-year-old entertainer who got her start on the Disney Channel's That's So Raven, which was a great show, by the way. That was the best show. I'm just going to do a quick aside right now. Best shows ever produced for kids is not this new stuff. I don't know. What is even on the Disney Channel right now? Is that Wizard show still on? Wizards of that place? I don't know. What is it? Phineas and Ferb? Is that a show? I don't know. But if you want to talk about some incredible television programming for kids, for teens, preteens, young teens, talk about classic Disney Channel. That's So Raven, Even Stevens. Oh my God. What else? Boy Meets World. Holy crap. Boy Meets World was incredible. But That's So Raven. Anyways, I'm sorry. That was a quick aside. Raven Simone, who got her start on the Disney Channel's That's So Raven, recently revealed that she is in a relationship with a woman. In a tweet on August 2nd, 2013, she applauded the government for legalizing same-sex marriage. I'm guessing this was in California. She said, "I can finally get married. Yay, government. So proud of you." That was August 2nd, 2013. Fast forward to just this past week. She's doing an interview with Oprah Winfrey in a Where Are They Now segment, which is kind of like Oprah hosting a Where Are They Now. She needs her own Where Are They Now. I mean, talk about your fame diminishing a little bit. But in the interview, the first thing she said, she was talking about her relationship. Oprah asked her if that tweet was her way of coming out. She admitted that she was in a relationship with a woman. Oprah asked her when she knew she was gay. And Raven said, you know, that she was very young, but she doesn't really want to be labeled as gay. She said, quote, "I don't want to be labeled as gay. I want to be labeled as a human who loves other humans." But that wasn't the statement who got people all worked up. People were fine with that. Okay. You don't want to be called gay. Okay. That's fine. The second thing she said when talking about race, she said, quote, "I'm tired of being labeled. I'm an American. I'm not an African American. I'm an American." Oh God, if you haven't seen the video, go watch the video, because the reaction that Oprah has whenever Raven says, I'm not an African-American, I'm an American. Oprah just about loses her mind. She shifts in her seat and she's going, oh my gosh, you're going to set the Twitter on fire. Which is funny to me when a media mogul still refers to it as the Twitter or the Twitters. Then she continued on. She said, I will say this. I don't know where my roots go to. I don't know how far back they go. I don't know what country in Africa I'm from, but I do know my roots are in Louisiana. You can watch the entire segment on outsetmagazine.com. So here we have a pretty simple and I think admirable statement. She doesn't want to be labeled. She may be gay, but she doesn't want to be labeled gay. She may be an African American. She doesn't want to be labeled. She wants to be known as an American. And of course, people got so worked up over this, both on the Twitters and also on places like MSNBC, where Reverend Al Sharpton said that she should not have said those things, that she was wrong for saying she wasn't proud to be black, or that, you know, all of the work that civil rights leaders have done, how dare her disrespect the work they've done. Here's the thing about Al Sharpton's comments, though. They're very flawed. Because if you listen to the clip, which I'm guessing he didn't, MSNBC rarely ever listens to the full clip. Usually just their edited parts. But even in an edited part, this would have been very clear. She wasn't saying she wasn't proud of her African heritage. She wasn't. Never once. I have the quote right here. I have the transcript right here. Never once did she says, ugh, I am not an African American. Ooh, African Americans. Like, oh, that's not me. I'm not proud of that. She never said that. She also didn't say she wasn't proud to be gay. Actually, in my opinion, when you talk about it like she did, she's pretty proud. She wasn't denying her African roots. She said, I don't know what country in Africa I'm from. I do know my roots are in Louisiana. So she wasn't saying, Africa? Never heard of it. I'm not from there. Isn't that where Ebola comes from? Don't associate that with me. After she said, I do know my roots are in Louisiana, she said again, I'm an American. And Oprah said, well, you're just like one little melting pot in a body. And she said, aren't we all? The fact there's been outrage over this is, I think, deeply disturbing. And the fact that more people don't already think this way is disturbing. Are we not all Americans? Are we not all on the same team? I mean, we have people in America who have a European background, who have an Asian background or an African background or a Hispanic background. But at the end of the day, we're all Americans. We're all on the same team. We're all rooting for the same ideas, I would hope. You read the first part of the Constitution, what does it say? It says, we the people of the United States of America, in order to form blah, 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 blah. It doesn't say, we the English, Dutch, German, Scottish, blah, 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 people of the United States of America. It said, we the people of the United States of America. Because back then, they understood. We're all on the same team. We're all Americans. You know, you had all type of ethnic groups during the original founding of our country. You had English, Dutch, German, French. Hopefully most of them are gone now. But you have the French, Swedish, I'm sure. I think we're over here. I don't know. IKEA had to start here somehow. Jewish people were over here. But we were all Americans then. And now today, it's funny because there are people who traditionally have said, well, we shouldn't label each other. Oh, you know, labels are overrated. You know, the hipsters like to say, I don't like labels. And then when Raven says, you're right, labels are overrated, so I'm just going to call myself an American. I'm not going to worry about African American or gay American. I'm just going to call myself an American. People are like, what? No, you can't do that, Raven. No. Because they're so pathetic. Because here's the thing. I have a friend who told me this before, an older friend. I don't know. But he said it very clearly. He said, today, in order to be successful, especially in politics, you have to be divisive. You have to be divisive. And I think that's true. You know, people like Al Sharpton and Eric Holder and Jesse Jackson, they would not have a job anymore if more people thought like Raven. If everything that happens didn't become a race issue, those people would be out of a job. Race baiters. I mean, if everything wasn't an issue of oh, well, that person was only treated badly because of their color, or only that person was only treated badly because of their sexual orientation. We have organizations who go out and they're hunting for small cases so they can scream, discrimination! Division sells. Division makes you money now. How sad is that? We're almost 50% divided in this country. I mean, we're at our maximum point of division now. We are so stretched. We are so hateful towards each other. And we wonder why. We wonder why, oh, why is America, why is our country going downhill? Why are things going so poorly? Why does it seem like everything is about race, or everything is about sexual orientation, or everything is about some sort of discriminatory factor? We wonder, why is this happening? It's because we're not thinking the right way. We're not thinking like Raven Simone. We're not understanding that, again, we're all on the same team. We are all Americans. I am tired of the division in this country. I got involved with politics because government was interesting to me. But also because I actually thought that 2008 was going to be the start of an era of just American prosperity and revitalization. I really thought that 2008, America was going to come out on top again. I don't think that anymore. I don't know how much longer we're going to be in this mess that we're in. But I'll tell you this. I am not happy, not just with where my country is. I'm not happy with where this industry that I'm trying to break into is. If you know me, you know I've I am working on some things that hopefully will bring me further into the media, the political media industry. But I'm starting to look around and I'm starting to realize that things are so screwed up right now. I don't know if this is what I want to do anymore. I posted this on my Facebook page a couple of days ago. Facebook.com/Stephen Perkins. I said, this is just a note about kind of the future. I said this. I said, the more I look at how things are going, the more I am convinced that the future of this country relies on less divisiveness and more understanding of each other. I'm trying to break into an industry that thrives on being divisive. The more you blame one side, the more popular you become. Sorry, but that's not what I'm going to do, even if that means I miss out on opportunities. I think you're either part of the problem or part of the solution. That's why over the next few months, we are working on things to get America back on track, a united track. Outset Magazine.com is going to become more than just a news and opinion website. And I've been saying this for a while. Outset is what you see right now at OutsetMagazine.com is, if plans go correctly, it is the smallest part of our future plans. So it's going to become more than just a website for millennials. And Reactor Media is going to become more than just a digital production company. It will take work, work that I can't do alone. So here's to hoping that the people I reach out to for help are willing to get involved. But it will also take risk. Risk that won't make sense to those of you who read my blog or OutsetMagazine.com. Risk that won't make sense to those of you who are listening right now. Risk that I don't even think are going to make sense to me. But here's what I do believe. We have to stop adding fuel to the fire that will one day burn us. That is currently burning us. We are so close from, I hate to say it, but we are so close from another civil war between ourselves. Except this time between North and South, it's going to be between white and black, young and old, religious and non-religious, conservatives and liberals. I don't know how much longer we can continue at our current trend without slipping into another civil war. I don't know how long. What I do know is that there is an opportunity to reverse this. We have an incredible opportunity right now to not only inject just positive things into our culture, but literally change the course of our history. I think if we really put our minds to these next few years, these next 3 to 5 years, I'm predicting, I think we can keep us from slipping into a war against white and black, young and old, liberal, conservative, rich and poor. I'll tell you this. I haven't been praying much. It's always been something that I just haven't done a lot of. I didn't grow up with bedtime prayers. And I'm starting to do it more now. And I'm not even, I mean, my prayers are simple. They just consist of, I'm not praying that the whole world is converted to Christianity or that they have this big change of heart. My prayer is simple. I want good people to be in charge again. I want good people to be in charge again. And I really don't care what your party affiliation is. I don't. Here in my city, there's someone challenging the incumbent mayor right now. He's a Republican. The challenger is a Democrat. I'll tell you right now, I'm voting for the Democrat because the Republican mayor that we have right now is a terrible person. I will be voting for a Democrat as mayor of my city in this upcoming election because I'm done. I'm done with the labels. I'm done with looking at this as a conservative or liberal issue because it's not. There's a lot of people who think that all conservatives are out to ruin the country. There are a lot of people who think that liberals are out to ruin this country. And if you think one of those things, you're ignorant. You're wrong. It's just not what is going on. We got to stop relying so much on the letter next to someone's name, whether that be an R or a D. We need to stop relying so much on labeling each other as gay or straight or white or black or whatever, rich or poor, young or old. We're at a point now where we cannot consume ourselves any longer with such a petty area of focus. Which is why to Raven Simone, I say thank you so much for doing what you're doing. I really appreciate your comments, and I think you're right on. All right, just to let you know, this show is not able to continue without the support of our partners who allow me to mention them on the show. The first one is audible.com. As I've said before, I'm not a big, I like to read. I think reading is really important. I've been reading a lot of books on innovation. I've been reading biographies. I haven't been doing as much political books, but I've been doing more business kind of innovation books, biographies of inventors and businessmen. And in fact, Walt Disney, I'm reading about him right now. Incredible guy. But what's even better than reading a book is listening to a book, in my opinion, especially when I'm stuck in traffic, which this city always seems to have. I'll pop in an audiobook from audible.com. It's incredible. Many of the books are read by the author themselves. Over 150,000 titles to choose from, a huge collection. And they're all waiting for you. And for the listeners of this program, audible.com is wanting to give you not only your first download for free, but a free 30-day trial. And here's how you redeem that. Go to audibletrial.com/Stephen. Spell my name right, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. That's audibletrial.com/Stephen. And get your free audiobook download and your free 30-day trial. And just start learning more. Cause if you want to win an argument with somebody, you know, if you want to get that job, you gotta be the smartest. And there's really no other way, to get smart than to read. So hack the system instead of reading, listen to it. audibletrial.com/Stephen. All right, here's the stories we have coming up, talking about the news. First thing I have, the Ebola patient here in Texas, in Dallas, Texas, died this past week. We'll talk about that. The Supreme Court refuses to hear same-sex marriage case. And Fusion has a new poll out about millennials and how they interact or what they believe political or politically wise. So let's talk about the first one. Headline from Outset Magazine, getting that plug in. Dallas Ebola patient dies. Thomas Duncan, the Ebola patient being treated at the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, Texas, has died, according to a hospital spokesman. The statement released by the hospital said, "It is with profound sadness and heartfelt disappointment that we must inform you of the death of Thomas Eric Duncan this morning at 7:51, this morning on October 8th, by the way. Mr. Duncan succumbed to an insidious disease, Ebola. He fought courageously in this battle. Our professionals, the doctors and nurses in the unit, as well as the entire Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital Dallas community, are also grieving his passing. We have offered the family our support and condolences at this time." So the guy is, he's died. Which means that at the moment, Ebola has been eradicated from Texas. And I feel obliged to say hashtag thanks, Rick Perry. Even though he had nothing to do with it. Let's just go ahead and predict it. When he runs in 2016, he's probably going to be like, you know what? You want to talk about leadership? I have leadership. When the Ebola patient came to Texas, we took care of him just like we took care of people who commit violent crimes. They both died. So the Ebola patient is dead. Now, there was a sheriff who had entered his apartment who thought he had Ebola. He was rushed to the hospital in a very O.J. Simpson style way. Freeway was shut down. Ambulance was rushing down. That's more of a cop car. But the ambulance was rushing down. They got him to the hospital. He tested negative. So right now, Ebola is not a threat in Texas. So I feel a lot better. I'm actually, I'm going to go ahead and sell my stock in the companies that make the little face mask. Because I had bought stock in those companies just in case anything went down. So I'm going to sell my stock after I'm done recording this show. So that's really good news. But here's the thing about Ebola. People are still freaking out about it. I've talked with, who have I talked about the past week? Stephanie Conway over at NGC, as well as Crystal Heath at the 405. I've talked with them just about the hysteria that's been going on about Ebola. And the fact that people are just so moronic about it, you know, people who think that they can get it through the air, believe it or not, there's still people who believe that. There's still people who believe that they can get Ebola from the air. So that is what only having a GED gets you. But so far, it looks like things are getting better on the Ebola front. There is, of course, medication that they're trying to get developed. Estimates right now are that it won't become available until early 2015. They're trying to speed that up. I'm going to go ahead and predict that by December, we're going to have a vaccination for it. And further, you know, the airports have not been shut down. People can still easily fly here from countries where Ebola originated from. So I'd love to hear your opinion on that. Do you think that airports should be shut down? Either let me know on Twitter at Stephen_Perkins or on Facebook, facebook.com/Stephen Perkins. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. All right, let's go to probably one of the bigger stories this week. And that is with the Supreme Court. So headline from Outset Magazine, again, Supreme Court refuses to hear same-sex marriage case this term. Same-sex marriage is now effectively legal in 5 more states following the Supreme Court's refusal on Monday to hear any gay marriage cases during their upcoming term. Indiana, Oklahoma, Utah, Virginia, and Wisconsin are the 5 states that the justices refused to hear appeals from. These states were hoping that the nation's highest court would rule in their favor, thus keeping the statewide ban on gay marriage in place. Just hours after the news broke of the court's decision, many same-sex couples rushed to the courthouse to file for marriage licenses. According to CNN, 6 more states have yet to lift their ban. Have yet to lift their ban on same-sex marriage as well. Or 6 more states may have to. Here's the quote. Quote, experts say its refusals to hear the case from those 5 states also means That's six more states: Colorado, North Carolina, South Carolina, Kansas, West Virginia, and Wyoming could soon have to lift their bans on same-sex marriage because they are covered by the same circuit appeals courts that initially struck down the prohibitions. Once that happens, the number of states permitting same-sex marriage would jump from 19 to 30. Okay. This is, remember I said that people on my site are not going to like me for this episode. And here's the reason why. I think what the Supreme Court did was good. I think that refusing to hear the case, is a good thing, both on a constitutional basis, dealing with our federalist system, and just the conservative movement, I believe, should embrace this. If you've noticed, the GOP has been very silent this week about the Supreme Court's decision. They have not released a statement. The only big chatter that we've heard was from Ted Cruz, who is planning on introducing a bill in the Senate that says that the Supreme Court cannot reverse any marriage law that a state has. But that just shows how Ted Cruz is on this issue out of touch. So now same-sex marriage is legal in five more states, all because of this, in effect, it's like an indirect decision by the Supreme Court. They ruled on it without ruling on it because they knew what was going to happen. Here's what I think about it. I think the Supreme Court shouldn't be dealing with this case or any same-sex marriage case. I'm going to be called an extremist for this one, but if you read the Constitution, I'm pretty sure, I've read it a couple of times, all right, but I'm pretty sure that the Constitution does not give the federal government a say in marriage. There's not a clause under the House of Representatives section, under the Senate. The Supreme Court certainly isn't given that. Because this is very much so a states' rights issue. Your state should have, the people of a state should have the right to determine what is going to be legal in their state in terms of marriage. But this also presents another legal issue, because also in the Constitution is a clause that that essentially says if it's legal in one state, it's got to be legal in another. That's why your driver's license, you have a Texas driver's license, I can drive in Connecticut. So there are two sides to it. The first side is that, yeah, states should be able to decide what they want their marriage laws to be. And then other people will say, well, if one state decides it, all of them have to recognize it. Here's what I think. Why does the government have to define marriage? Really, why does the government have to tell you whether your relationship is right or not? I'll tell you something. When I marry one day, I'm not going to go to the government and say, oh, please tell us that our love and our relationship is legal. Please tell my wife and I that what we're doing is right. That's not what I plan on doing. The only person's approval that I need when I go to marry my future wife is God's approval. That's all I need. I don't I don't need any value to be placed on my marriage from the government, either federal or state or local. I don't get value. No one gets value in their relationship. No one should get value in any relationship from the government saying that it's okay. You know, it's funny. Republicans talk about how we want less government, how we want less interference in our everyday lives. Well, then, hey, GOP, this is your chance to actually affirm that belief. If the GOP really believes that the government should stay out of your life, then they should come out and say, you know what? Yeah, we do believe the government should stay out of your life, which is why we believe the government should not define your relationship. But the GOP is famously taking issue with that logic, because their logic says that their core base doesn't want that. Yeah, well, your core base is dying. Let me tell you that, GOP. Your core base is going to be dead in a few years. Not a few years, but a couple of decades. This leads right into the next one. Oh my God, this is perfect. The core base, Republicans are trying to say, how are we going to attract more millennials? I have an idea. Ooh, pick me. I have an idea. How about you stop telling them what their relationships are? In fact, a new Fusion poll says 68% of millennial voters support gay marriage. 60%. That's incredible. Or, yeah, 68%. That's incredible. Young Hispanic voters support gay marriage at higher rates than any other group. So it's obvious where the trends are going. Very obvious. GOP needs to catch up. I'm glad they haven't said anything about the Supreme Court's decision. I'm glad they're just kind of letting it be, letting it play its course. That's the role that they need to be taking. Yeah, just, I mean, let what happens happen. All right, let me talk more about the Fusion poll before we close out the show today. So this new Fusion poll was a study of 1,200 likely voters, ages 18 to 34, millennials, on their attitudes about everything from the midterm elections to police tactics in Ferguson to smoking pot. Yeah, that's a fun statistic. You can, by the way, read this at fusion.net. Part of their write-up here says, likely millennial voters, the people we talk to, are different from registered voters or members of the general millennial population. Our sample was screened for people who actually voted in midterms, which is a small percentage of the overall millennial population. Just 23% of millennials are expected to cast a vote in the midterms, according to Harvard Institute of Politics, great organization. Really, though? Only 23? So here we are. Millennials are sitting around. We're bitching about, you know, the government not having our best interests in mind. We're saying, the government, they're spying on our emails. They're getting us into debt. They're putting us into more wars. And yet only 23% of us are going to vote. Good God. Like, how sad is that? 23% of us are going to vote in the midterms. I understand it's a midterm. Like for some reason, people think the only election that I should care about is the main general election. The midterms is just, you know, governors, and ugh, who are they? Like, I don't even know who my governor is. So here's the major findings from this Fusion survey, and I want to hear your thoughts about these. Tweet me, Facebook me. Call me, beat me if you want to reach me, whatever. Major findings. The first one, Paul Ryan is the top pick for president in 2016 among millennial Republicans who are likely to vote. Okay, so I like Paul Ryan. He's a good guy, obviously. He does the workout thing. You know, he's a buff guy, attractive to the females. But really, he's our top pick. You want to know something even more disturbing? So Paul Ryan got 16%. Guess who came in second? Jeb Bush with 11%. What the hell is wrong with my generation? Jeb Bush came in second as the favorite for the Republican in 2016. Oh yeah, I'm not feeling good about my generation of conservatives right now. Rand Paul only got 9%. We're going to talk about something that he's doing right now. Right this very instant. We're going to talk about that here in a second. Rand Paul only got 9%. On the Democrat side, Hillary Clinton is the top pick for president among young Democrats. 58% of millennial voters say they'll support Clinton. So here you go. The first, the top pick among millennial Democrats, 58% behind Clinton. The first pick for young Republicans, 16% behind Paul Ryan. There's a big divide there. Here's a good part too. So after the 58% who support Clinton, 13% support Joe Biden. Oh my God. Really? That's worse than Jeb Bush. 13% of young Democrats support Joe Biden? Like, I don't even know what to say right now. I don't even know what is the appropriate response when 13, which isn't that big of a percentage, but it's enough. How many is that? Let's see. Out of the, what do they do? How many did I say they, so out of 1,200, 156 of them. Well, that's not even... Okay, less than that, because 156 would be 13% of the entire sample size. So luckily, we could safely say like less than 75% of the respondents said Joe Biden. But still, anything over one person in support of Joe Biden is way too much support for Joe Biden in 2016. You must just not have heard anything he's ever said. 9% support Elizabeth Warren. God help us. Here's another key takeaway. In the midterm elections, 47% of likely millennial voters say they'll choose Democrats, 32% say they'll vote for Republicans, and 21% are undecided. I feel like everyone's undecided, or I feel like a lot of people are undecided until Election Day. You know, SNL did that skit about the undecided voter. Who are they going to vote for? I don't know. No one knows. Only 15% of young black voters and 17% of young Hispanic voters are likely to support Republicans, because I guess they're okay with the fact that the Democrats claim to support them but actually push them deeper into poverty. But it's whatever. It's none of my business. Millennial voters say the economy, debt and spending, and terrorism are the most important issues for them. Thank God. Really? Like, if someone would have said, I think that women's reproductive rights are the most important issues this election, I'd be done. I'd be done with everything that I do. So it's good to know that people are actually concerned about the economy, debt, spending, terrorism. 60% of young voters and 69% of young Hispanic voters want to allocate more resources to address the border crisis of unaccompanied minors. I'm not sure if that necessarily means securing the border. I think it just means like helping the people who have been here already. In the wake of Ferguson, a majority of voters oppose the militarization of police. 56% say military weapons are unnecessary for police. Hey, yeah, I agree. That's one area that the Republican Party can say, hey, we agree. Yeah, don't militarize the police. 84% of young voters think marijuana should be legal for medicinal purposes. Fair enough. I think it was like what was it, like 60, it's on here somewhere, 50%, 50% of respondents said that they had smoked marijuana before. As I said, 68% of American or millennial voters support gay marriage. 60% of millennial voters are in debt. Surprise. And 69% are concerned about their ability to pay it off. The difference here is, how do you pay it off? Do you want the government to just forgive the debt? Because that's what a lot of them want. Or are you, you know what you should do? Pay attention to Dave Ramsey. He'll teach you how to pay it off. 59% of young voters believe gun ownership should come with responsible restrictions. And 9% think individuals should be banned from carrying guns. I'm glad it's only 9%. So out of the, let's see, that was 108, approximately 108% of the people who said that. I'm glad it's only 9%. And finally, 66% of young white voters trust police officers to treat them fairly versus 46% of young black voters. Can't say I blame them. All right, and here is what Fusion says are some of the more intriguing findings. First one, young Hispanic voters support gay marriage at higher rates than any other groups. We knew that. 71% of likely Republican voters say they've never smoked marijuana. Versus 55% of young Democrats. Young independent voters are, like I said, 55% say they've used marijuana. Republican millennial voters have more debt than Democrats. That's interesting, actually. I didn't see that whenever I originally went through the study. They have more debt. That's interesting. Only 4% of millennial voters think climate change is the most important issue facing the United States. I feel like that's a lot. Just 17% of young Hispanics say the Republican Party represents their views on immigration, and only 12% of young millennial voters report that they get their news about politics from social media, which that was surprising too, only 12%, but I guess, you know, you're talking about a big age range, 18 to, what do they do here, 18 to 34. So only 12% get their news from social media. I think if you look at a smaller sample size, probably 18 to 30, most millennials probably get their news from social media, from Jon Stewart, unfortunately. So if you want to read more about that poll, go to fusion.net. But I mean, here's the thing, guys. Here's what we're seeing. There's a huge change in politics going on right now. There are millennials who, you know, they're fed up. They're fed up with how things are going. And I think it's like what I said at the beginning of this show is, we got to stop dividing each other. We have to stop tearing each other down. We have to stop saying, oh, you're a liberal? Oh, you're to blame for all of our problems. Oh, you're a conservative? You're to blame for all of our problems. Or you're evil. We need to stop saying, oh, it's okay for the government to take our data. It's okay for our privacy rights to be going away. Conservative people need to step up to the plate and realize that the future of the movement has to involve millennials. Because like I said, people who are deeply conservative, they are mainly baby boomers and beyond. And they'll be dead within a couple of decades. So the question is, how do we reach out to millennial voters? And I think we have to get rid of all the disinformation. We have to tell people, listen, there are a lot of issues that we're not going to agree on. But we can agree on this. We can agree on some simple issues. The government should not infringe on your privacy. The government really shouldn't be infringing on your life that much. The government should be forced to view their spending and income the same way that you do. We shouldn't be in all these wars that we don't know how to fight because we have no strategy. I think a lot is changing right now. I don't know what it means, but like I shared with you, my Facebook status, I'm not relying on politics to change everything. I'm looking at culture, and we're going to be working on some things here in the next few months and the next few years that I think, are going to really make a difference. I think they're going to be really good. Let me tell you before we go. And before I say one last thing, I want to tell you about Octopod. Octopod is a new sponsor here on the program. An incredible, incredible company. If you're like me, you're on your phone all the time, always using it. I just got, this isn't funny. If my father's listening, I've used just about all the data on my program, on our cellular program already. So I'm on this thing a lot. And the thing that happens with every smartphone, doesn't matter, you know, which one you're on, the battery depletes so quickly. I mean, you blink and you're below 20%. So this is what Octopod does. They are a company that produces and provides portable powering solutions for your devices, whether it's an Android or an Apple device, whether it's a tablet or a phone or whatever you're trying to power. And the best part is solar powered. Some of their products are solar powered, so you don't even have to plug in this charger every night. You just walk around and, you know, the sun will charge your devices for you. So to check out the amazing line of products that Octopod has, go to octopod.com/Steven. That's octopod.com/Steven. octopod.com/Steven. All right, well, here's the thing. And then in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be having some people on the program. I'm already working on getting some interviews lined up. So it's going to be it's going to be an exciting few next couple of weeks on the program. Please make sure to tune in. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. And until we speak again next time, take care of yourself. God bless.